It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
I can't think of a better place to be than riding around in a pickup through a ranch in country that is producing lots of food, but the food we're going to talk about today is lamb, and the people that I'm driving the pickup and I'm riding with are the Amys, and they have a lamb operation in Northern California. Really want to welcome to Farm to Table Talk, and glad you're letting me be in the pickup and get a tour here. And so I want to welcome Martin, Amy, and also his daughter, Sarah. Guys, thanks for showing me around.
Yes, well, thanks for coming out. We love to give tours and show people what we do.
Our stars have made it to the scene now. What are we looking at? We've got their sheep out here to the left side of the pickup. Where are these guys? What are we...
We have their Rambouillet, Hampshire, Suffolk Cross, and they're just some feeder sheep that are grazing on some green irrigated pasture, and they're grazing along, going to water, leaving, going to eat, and
they're all
sleeping.
Following somebody. They're either following a leader or they think this pickup's bringing food to them. I'm not sure.
No, they're just following each other. And they're checking out the field.
Yeah, well, they're just moseying along. And are these lambs that were, are there 120 pounds or?
Yeah, probably getting close to that, 120, 130 pounds.
Well, they, you know, they do look happy, but they're all ignoring the sunflowers. I think they're a little too far away for them to take them in. That they look happy and content, and they got a lot of room.
Mm-hmm. We just moved these lambs into this field this morning, so this is their first day in this new field, and so they'll typically do this. They when we moved them in, they moved all the way to the back to kind of check out the entire place, and now they're doing their second round to kind of walk the boundaries and see what the parameters are like, and then they'll settle down and just go to eating and then bed down. And they're very pattern oriented, just like people. You know, they'll get up in the early morning and eat and go to water, and then they'll go back and just lay down and loaf around for most of the morning, and then come back up for another maybe late morning snack, early afternoon snack, and do the same thing, and then in the evening once again.
Well, then the great thing about this is, I mean, they are enjoying the great outdoors, but there's no shade around. I mean, I would imagine a little uncomfortable when you're wearing a heavy wool sweater.
Yeah, well, they make shade for themselves. They'll get into little groups of each other, and one will be in the middle, and they'll have some shade covered by themselves, and then they'll switch around and rotate. So,
Well, and to add to that comment with the wool, some are shorn, some are not. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they'll all be shorn.
Yeah.
But the wool actually works as an insulator both ways. Mm-hmm. It keeps them cool when it's hot and warm when it's cold, because it breathes. And I don't know if you've noticed in other ag practices, especially with ag workers, many of them have an enormous amount of clothing on, even when it's warm, because it keeps the sun off of them. It keeps the weather off of them, and it kind of insulates their body to the elements, kind of like a wetsuit. If you go underwater, it keeps your body in the right temperature.
I've always wondered about that. You see people working in the fields, and they've got big heavy scarves around their face too, and they're just all covered up. And it's counterintuitive to many of us. We think we got to wear shorts in the summertime, and they're not. Now, again, get back to looking at these lambs. There are many of them are black faced. Some of them aren't. Some of them are what you call mottled face. And Sarah, you mentioned these were Rambouillet, Hampshire, Suffolk. So I assume this means that their mothers, the ewes, were Rambouillet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to people that don't know Rambouillet, it's kind of a French merino, isn't it? And people know the merino wool to be what's considered fine wool, so the kind of nice suits and everything that are really the light wool and tropical weight wools are merino sheep. And the ones that we have the most of in America are Rambouillet of the French style Merino, they used to have a reputation of not being as good a meat breed, but then you cross them with a Hampshire or a Suffolk, and the lambs do get that meat bred into them. Would that be a fair way of saying it?
Yeah.
And the people that understand, like the Hampshire and Suffolk, that's the rams, the dad of the matings. They are, Suffolks have black faces, almost their whole head practically is black. And the Hampshire's got kind of wool halfway down their face or so. I mean, it's black, but it's, you can really tell once you get used to it, the difference between a Hampshire and Suffolk.
Yeah.
And now, so if you're getting these Rambouillet, they must be, a lot of them come from, I know they're in like South Dakota and Texas and in California too, but I tend to think of some of these, like a couple of other states even first. Are these lambs California or?
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
So the Rambouillets, would they be in the South Valley that down towards like Bakersfield and Fresno that these lambs would be coming from?
Well, yeah.
The sheep?
Yes and no. Yeah, there's those breeds of lamb all throughout California.
Right. Okay.
And so yeah, they're about a third of these lambs came from right here in the Montezuma Hills.
And that is west
County,
of
Solano County.
Okay, which is Northern California and about an hour outside of Sacramento.
Yeah, an hour south of Sacramento.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the majority of the rest came from right here at the coast, just over in the Petaluma area.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know there were that many sheep over there.
Yeah, no, there's quite a few sheep over there. And so, yeah, we've got some Merino influence in these white faces. And then obviously the, like Sarah said, the crossbred between the Suffolk Hampshire Ram crossed with the Rambouillet ewe, which has Merino influence, for the wool. What I like about the Rambouillets is they're a big long-bodied ewe, and I sell my lambs by the pound, so the more pounds I got, the better it is. So.
Plus, the wool is worth something.
Yes, and especially right now, the wool market's pretty good for the white face wool.
The Rambouillets can sell well. But on the other hand, Hampshire and Suffolk, the black fiber and coarser fiber, it's not a very good market usually.
Typically not. You know, it's going to be quite a ways behind the white face market. You know, in particular, the fine wool white face market.
So these sheep, say for example, if they're over in Petaluma, they're competing with wine country over there. So you actually will see grazing these lambs grazing near vineyards in like Sonoma County.
I've heard of some producers grazing vineyards, kind of a graze for hire deal where they'll move from place to place, and they're mobile, and so they'll clean out the vineyard leaves, whatever the vintner needs, and then go on to the next place.
You know, we've had terrible forest fires in California, and there's been talk about how you keep the feed out of those forests. Used to be there was quite a bit of grazing done in the forest, and sheep herds would be taken up and graze, and they take down some of that cover that becomes a fuel for forest fires. Are some of your lambs coming out of grazing out of the forest?
Not that I know of. Our lambs, they're very local, and we don't go that far into the forest country. And I, to tell you the truth, I don't know any producers that are still grazing in those areas. And well, you just said it, and that's why we've got all this fuel. The fuel that keeps burning every summer. So that would be really a good thing if they would open up and encourage some, maybe incentivize some grazing up there for sheep and cattle, goats, whatever would eat the fuel, I think would be a good thing.
I agree, and it's too bad, but a lot of that has passed. There's still quite a bit in the mountains of back Colorado, Utah, Idaho, Montana, and so forth, but it's all under pressure, so that it would help a lot. Martin, you're looking around. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for?
I'm just I'm just looking at the, they're coming to water, and some of them are just getting impatient. You know, everybody has to wait their turn. We've got plenty of water supply here, but when they all come at once, they tend to drink it down real fast, and then everybody gets impatient. So they just have to wait for the water return to fill the troughs up fast enough so they can drink it. But it's a little warm, so they just got moved into this new field, so they're kind of checking things out and figuring out where everything is, and I'm just watching them. They look very, very happy to me. They're very full, very full, which is what I want to see, because that's what turns that grass into protein.
Right.
So
right.
It's a good thing.
Somebody already started a campaign for happy cows. So I don't know if it's too late to do one happy sheep, but if you're involved in kind of helping promote Amy Lamb. Do you ever think about pointing out how happy they are? You've mentioned it four times, so we've driven out to the field.
Yeah, well, usually when I post on our pages and stuff, I try to show the lambs out in the field grazing and loving the green grass and everything. So I try to put that in the captions to show people that they're happy.
You know, I can't get over the fact how much I think that fits. I mean, they've got plenty of room. They're outdoors. They're grazing on grass. And it is so counterintuitive to most people that say, oh, anything coming from what they consider as a feedlot, when you're feeding, they don't think about actually feeding with grass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So differentiating, they were on grass before they came here. They had, before they came here,
on their mother's.
Yeah, their mother's milk and starting to graze. Mm-hmm. Before they got here, and then you weaned them. So these lambs, usually when you get them, are what, 5 months or
roughly, yeah.
So old, and they come in, what's the average weight at about?
It varies, but they can be anywhere from 80 to 100 pounds, right around there. On the heavier end, maybe 110, but that's about the range. I would say 95 to 100 would be the, you know, average.
And when they leave, when they're finished, how much do they weigh?
Oh, as much as they can, but I think roughly, you know, 140 is my target.
Uh-huh.
140 pounds, you know, if we can get them 150-ish, that's good too, you know. I mean, and 160 is great also. Different times a year, the weights will fluctuate. Like right now, going into August and September, the feed is slowing down, so we lighten up here and to make sure everybody has enough feed to keep gaining weight at an adequate rate. But say in the spring, that's when everything grows really, really fast. So in the spring, in the late winter, early spring, when things start changing and things start growing really fast, so do the sheep and so do the lambs, cattle, everything grows really fast. So you're going to have heavier weights then. Mm-hmm. Than say now. Now the weights are dipping back to, you know, 50, 40-ish, you know, maybe even into the mid-130s. But typically 140 is my minimum target, and then anything over that, well, that's great.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, you're watering the pastures now. Mm-hmm. But is it just because the springs, you got those spring rains, it's even more? It just that it makes the grass,
right,
like,
well,
richer?
Well, I think that, you know, after the winter rains, all the nutrients are in the soil, and then when it starts warming up, well, everything just wants to grow. And then as we move through summer, like right now is a perfect example, in August, the soil just dries out more. Everything's dry. You know, anything
right,
that
sure.
doesn't get water, obviously, is,
sure.
is just, you know, dry, like the road we're on. But it takes a little more to keep it green and growing. Just it takes a little longer to get the growth out of it because it's hotter, it's drier, and it's using the water and nutrients that it has to grow at a maximum level. This is a time of year that it just everything just starts slowing down.
Well, you know, when you talk about the nutrients, I mean, a big part of that nutrients is, I mean, this isn't going to be a surprise to anybody, but sheep poop. And so when their waste gets into that pasture and they walk around and it's kind of, they kind of work it in with their, you know, little hooves, kind of work it into the soil, that must compensate for somebody that was just trying to grow pasture and sell hay off of it and didn't have livestock. They'd have to have a big nitrogen bill, I guess.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I would think so. Because I know people with gardens have come out over the years and taken some, like, sheep manure out of the corrals, and they say that it works really great for their garden. So, yeah, we kind of have a built-in fertilizer program right here with the sheep. Because, like you say, as they do their thing and distribute it throughout the fields, and then the next irrigation cycle kind of, I believe, it leaches all those nutrients out and back into the soil, and then it's just a revolving door program that happens every time we irrigate.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Sarah, you're back on the ranch, mm-hmm. and you've got quite a heritage. You know, some people say, well, my business started before the war, and you think, like, well, is that Afghanistan? Mm-hmm. And in your case, in the Amy family, that's like the Civil War. I mean, yeah. This is back in the 1860s, for crying out loud. Yeah. So this is what, like five generations
uh-huh.
or
yep.
so?
I'm, and you, I'm fifth
generation. So what made you come back to the ranch?
Well, good question. I've grown up with the sheep and the cattle and everything. And so I've always kind of seen myself coming back, working either in the office, on the ranch, doing whatever needs to be done, because I've seen all the hard work that my family has put into this, and it is a family business, so I wanted to come back and work in the family business. I mean, it's here right at my fingertips, so I don't see myself not doing it. I guess what I've always thought. But I went to school and did the college thing and got my education.
Which school did you go to?
Arizona State.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah, so I did that, and then I came back and started working more with the direct marketing business that we have, and social media, and getting our name out there and everything. So I think it's important to do all that, and my dad doesn't know really how to work all that social media stuff, so I think it's, and I obviously kind of grew up with that, so I think it worked out good to.
Well, yeah, promoting. And when this Amy Ranch started, social media was via Pony Express,
yeah.
And that's probably not exaggerating.
Yeah.
I imagine they did use Pony Express to spin the word. So when you set things up in the direct marketing program, and explain that. What is it?
Well, we sell our lamb to local butcher shops, restaurants, grocery stores in Sacramento, San Francisco, Napa, St. Helena area. So we take our lambs in to the slaughterhouse and pick them up a few days later, and then me and my sister take them to all the restaurants and butcher shops and places that want it.
You know, when I'm at restaurants sometime, I'm envious of the people selling wine, and they come in and they open a bottle up and they say, let's taste this wine.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, usually they're pretty good about spitting it out in that case, but after they've tasted it. But do you ever do the same thing with your lamb, that somebody that is going to start them in a restaurant and you actually have them try some, or you sit down and give them a bite or two of your lamb?
Well, we'll give them, sometimes some people will ask for samples, a sample of a certain cut or whatever they are interested in, and we'll tell them what kind of samples we have to
mm-hmm.
offer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll bring them one, and then they can do with it what they want, cook it how they want, prepare it how they want, and try it. And if they like it, they order. If they don't, they don't call back.
Well, you know, how much does it enter into the story that you can tell them that these are actually grass-fed, and that, you know, that in addition to just buying lamb, which I'm sure they want to know how many pounds they're getting, what the cut is, and how much per pound. But beyond that, how often do you have to get that broader story of, I don't know if you get into whether the breeds are necessarily, but what grass feeding means and, your family's role in it? Is a story usually attached?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they will usually know our story or where we came from and all that before they contact us, or
mm-hmm.
they have done their research or know someone or do all that. So yeah, we usually, if they have any questions, we'd be happy to tell them and explain and give them more information and look at our website, and it has all the information on there too. So,
well, and then Martin, you take these lambs to be processed, and there's a slaughterhouse, and mm-hmm. you know, then they're going to be processed into lamb. How you don't own one? How do you do that? I mean, you don't own a packing plant, do you?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're fortunate here in our local area that we've got a plant that does what they call kill and return, so you can get your animal back that you've raised, and so that's how that works. It's just a fortunate thing that it's right here in my backyard, and so yeah, I can take advantage of that. So it works out real well.
And so you get the lamb, and it's processed into the cuts that are marketable,
whole carcass or cuts or whatever we need, really.
Do you freeze any?
We freeze some, you know, with the cuts, sometimes it's hard to move everything at once, but if we have to freeze some stuff, we'll freeze it, but we don't do much. I mean, most of the stuff moves very, very quickly.
So how many ranchers would you be doing business with that are bringing, you're getting lambs from, that you're growing on this grassland?
Oh, it's a relatively small amount, you know. I mean, I would say maybe 5 to 6.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because usually the our customers that we procure from are our regular customers, you know, that mm-hmm. we do business with every year. So.
Great to see this and to see these lambs. And I wish everybody could be doing the tour. I don't think you're ready to put a sign out on 80 and tell everybody to pull off. But people that enjoy eating lamb, I think they would like to see the story behind it.
Yeah.
And see these lambs out here on these pastures. Now you got to make a living from this. I mean,
yeah.
You've been in the business for a long time. In other areas of the Central Valley, they're doing row crops. You haven't planted almonds here yet. You know, they're just like all over the place. Is it just because pasture is better in this part?
Oh yeah, yeah. This is irrigated pasture land. Alfalfa, sedan grass, field corn, sunflowers. That's pretty much it. It's just because of the location of the land. The soil is a, you know, the classes of soil go from 1 to whatever, but it's definitely not class 1 soil. So it's marginal ground, and it's great ground for pasture or hay or other crops like I just mentioned. But predominantly, you know, since we do pasture and livestock, that's what we use it for. And so it fits us well. So it's just a good place to raise animals. And typically the trees and the almonds and all those type of other crops, they typically require higher quality soil. And this soil is it holds the water very well. It doesn't drain well, so that's not conducive to tree growth. So that's why, you know, one of the reasons why it grows pasture well.
You know, Sarah, I'm wondering, you've come back to the ranch. It doesn't look like Silicon Valley here. I mean, it's not something that you're going to be able to replace with robots. It's this idea of grazing on grass and raising this protein that you are. I'm curious, if you look down the road and say, you know, like your dad or your grandparents before you, you're able to be associated with this business for another 30 or 40 years, mm-hmm. maybe. What makes you optimistic about that future?
Well, I think since it's been working for 4 generations, I'm hoping it'll keep. It'll keep for my generation and maybe the future generations. And so I just...
Well,
I'm praying that it keeps.
Yeah. Well, and you're on your social media trying to promote the product mm-hmm. too. Do you see any trends as far as, like, you're probably a millennial? What do you see from those that you're in contact with about how they feel about what you're doing?
Well, I think everyone is on the trend for healthy and grass fed and natural, and they want to know where their food comes from, which is for the younger generations and everything. So I think it's important to show them where their food is coming from and what is happening and what they need to know, be educated on what they're eating and where it comes from and who the farmer, who the rancher is. So the farm to table, farm to fork, all those programs are good and important, and what better way than social media to show that? Because everyone's on social media, all the younger generation is doing that. So there's good things that come from it and bad things, and this is one of the good things.
Well, Martin, these sheep are getting restless, so we're about ready to wrap up. But I could see you're not only looking around here proud of these sheep, but you're proud of your daughter too, and then have the family continuing in this business. It hasn't been easy being in the sheep business. The numbers of sheep raised in the United States have declined, and there's been plenty of pessimism about, gosh, can we make it work? They have coyotes to deal with, and you know, it's hard to have the numbers for national distribution and all these things. What makes you feel most hopeful about the future?
Well, as far as my situation, my family situation, that's one of the reasons why we started doing the direct marketing. I started it, my gosh, 25 years ago, direct marketing, and when I was very young, and I started it, and it was going very well, but I just couldn't. I couldn't make enough money with that at that time, and I was spread so thin. I needed to take care of the ranch and the direct marketing, and I was doing everything myself. So I kind of just put that on the shelf for a while. And then I'm thinking about 8 or 10 years ago, we started this again, and it really took off because of the farm to fork movement and all that. And we were able to create an economic matrix to where it was working for the ranch and the direct marketing side. And the point is, the direct marketing is something that works for me and my family because it's kind of an insurance policy to staying in business, to staying in the sheep business, in the lamb business. Because when you're out there without anywhere to go with your lambs as far as marketing, you only have very limited places to sell your lamb. It can be very scary economically because you hit a couple of down markets and nobody likes to work for nothing. So if you get into that situation and the markets are very low and you have to sell your crop in its entirety for a very low level and you're not making much money, well, that's why a lot of the people have not stayed in the industry. So with the direct marketing, that kind of gives us a bit of an insurance policy. So we make a little bit on that end and a little bit on the ranch end. And it seems like it makes everything work.
Well, it needs to make everything work. And the other thing you got is a really excellent, a delicious product. I've eaten some of the lamb. And just in wrapping up, one final thing is that maybe back to you, Sarah, if people want to find you on social media or the web, how do they find you?
It's everything is at Amy Lamb, so amylamb.com. Our Instagram's Amy Lamb, Facebook's Amy Lamb, so you can keep up with us.
And it's spelled E-M-I-G-H, because it sounds different than that. And it's pronounced Amy, but it's spelled E-M-I-G-H, and they can find you online. I'm really excited about what you're doing. I want to thank you both for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you, Roger.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.